don't deserve me.
It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy. Hello. Hello. I haven't talked yet today, so I had to cough, clear my throat, I guess. Welcome, one and all. It is April 7th, 2022, and it is 1902 UTC as we talk right now. So, hello, welcome. Big shout out to Roll Time, who is dealing with time change issues still, I think. Claudio M, X1, and Stug, thank you so much for being here. Before I keep almost going into the spiel, and then I remember, wait, I recorded this, so I don't have to say it all over again. All right, and if you'd like to join and chat during the show, you can do that while we're doing it live. All you need to do is SSH over to sdf.org, and once you're there, go ahead and launch comm. If you don't have an account yet, all you need to do is SSH over as new, N-E-W, at sdf.org, and you'll be able to sign up for an account. Once you sign up for an account, then you SSH over, you launch comm, that's C-O-M, you press enter, you press G for go to, and then type Anon Radio, all lowercase, all one word, and then that will connect you to the Anon Radio room, where you get to hang out with cool people like Stug and Claudio M and Ratsu and X1 and Jazzmaz, if he's listening, and all sorts of cool people. So definitely go ahead and do that. Yeah, and then once you're finished, go ahead and, chat, I guess. Thank goodness Claudio M's here. We would have been very confused. All right, well, let's talk about the news. We'll start the way we always start.
World news.
And this is this is scary and sad, and it's makes me nervous. I guess it's mostly because I work with people, and their office is based in Shanghai. So, got an email that said, hey, don't expect replies from people in Shanghai, maybe, because they might be in a lockdown center or something. Shanghai, residents are running out of food in COVID lockdown. Some residents under lockdown in Shanghai say they're running out of food amid the city's biggest ever COVID outbreak. Residents are confined to their homes, banned from leaving for even essential reasons such as grocery shopping. Nearly 20,000 cases were reported on Thursday in China's biggest city, another near-record high. Officials have admitted the city is facing difficulties, but say they are trying to improve this. But public anger is also being stoked by other drastic measures, such as the removal of children from their parents if they test positive. Shanghai officials later responded by allowing parents who were also infected to accompany their children to isolation centers. However, according to a Reuters report, there are still complaints over children separated from parents who were not COVID positive. The city began another round of mandatory mass testing on Wednesday to identify and isolate every case. Shanghai residents who test positive can't isolate in their homes even if their conditions are mild or asymptomatic. They have to go to mandatory quarantine facilities, which critics say have become crowded and have subpar conditions. So why is there a food shortage? Well, it's pretty similar to what happened in the United States, I'd say. When Omicron first emerged in Shanghai a month ago, the city quarantined only certain compounds. Then as the virus spread, officials last week implemented a staggered lockdown, where the city was split into two, and each half had separate measures. On Monday, the lockdown was extended indefinitely to cover the entire city of 25 million people. Strict rules mean most people have to order in food and water and wait for government drop-offs of vegetables, meat, and eggs. But the lockdown extension has overwhelmed delivery services, grocery shop websites, and even the distribution of government supplies. Many delivery personnel are also in lockdown areas, leading to an overall decrease in delivery capacity. Locals in some areas of the city say they've been completely cut off. Please solve the problem of insufficient delivery capacity as soon as possible, one user wrote on social media site Weibo. In response to city officials official video message. Another person wrote that it was the first time in my life that I have gone hungry. Residents have also raised other concerns about price gouging and how elderly or less tech-savvy residents are surviving. City officials acknowledged food struggles on Wednesday, saying Shanghai had enough supplies of rice, noodles, grain, oil, and meat, but there were delays in distributing them. It's true that there are some difficulties ensuring the supply of daily necessities, said Lu Min, the deputy director of the Shanghai Municipal Commission of Commerce. So, this is just a real tragedy, or it could become a real tragedy. We'll see how it plays out, but that's what's going on there. Welcome, Jay Gary. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for hanging out. So let's keep on going. Let's talk about people who are killed, or who did die. One migrant killed amid insecurity protests in north of Johannesburg. A man was killed by protesters denouncing the inaction of the authorities in the face of violence and crime in Johannesburg Township, the South African police announced Thursday. According to the public channel, SABC, and another media, the victim is a Zimbabwean immigrant. The murder comes amid growing popular anger over high crime rates, sometimes directed at immigrants accused of fueling them. Protests began Wednesday in the town of Diepsloot after it was announced that 7 people had been killed there last weekend. Residents angry at the police for allegedly refusing to attend to one crime scene marched through the streets with chants and placards, burning tires, and camping outside the local police station. In the evening, a small group of protesters went door-to-door checking residents' ID, said police spokeswoman Brenda Muradilli. So, as they arrived in front of your house, a young man got out and ran away, she said. They chased him, and unfortunately he was killed, she told state broadcaster SABC. The crime took place hours after a visit to the area by Police Minister Becky Selle and his police chief. So, this is just scary to think that these protesters are going door-to-door and trying to get people to show them their IDs, and they killed somebody, so... Anyway, scary times down there. All right, well, let's do a quick talk about stuff going on in Ukraine. And then, hey, welcome, Edison.me. We'll talk about that, and then we'll go ahead and...
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
We'll get there. First, let's go ahead and do a summary of what's happening over there in Ukraine. The battle for the Donbass region in eastern Ukraine will remind the world of World War II and involve thousands of tanks, Ukraine's foreign minister says. Dmytro Kuleba says ask NATO allies to provide everything we need, and we will fight not only for our security, but for your security. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says the alliance is ready to strengthen support, but does not provide details of weapons. Russia intends to use mass forces in the Donbass, top U.S. General Mark Milley says, adding, I think it's an open question how this ends. Meanwhile, Russia is suspended from the UN Human Rights Council over alleged war crimes after a vote in New York. The BBC has been told that Russian troops used villagers in northern Ukraine as human shields against counterattacks, and they have also seen residential areas flattened in Chernihiv, northeast of Kyiv, following the withdrawal of troops. So, that's kind of a quick highlights. Shell Oil, one of the most evil and hated companies in the world, one of the most evil for sure, the oil company Shell has confirmed it will take a hit of between $4 billion and $5 billion from offloading its Russian assets as the firm pulls back from the country. Bosses said they will no longer buy oil on the spot market, but will continue to fulfill contracts on buying fuel from Russia signed before the invasion of Ukraine. The company said Shell has not renewed longer-term contracts for Russian oil and will only do so under explicit governmental direction, but we are legally obliged to take delivery of crude bought under contracts that we signed before the invasion. It added that the state of the global oil markets remained volatile. Last month, Shell's boss was forced to apologize after buying oil on the spot market from Russia at knockdown prices. Because, there's one thing we know for sure. Shell does not have any allegiance to any country or God, only to money. The update on the cost of no longer doing business in Russia includes Shell quitting joint ventures with Gazprom. The company said previously that it would offload 27.5% stake in a Russian liquefied natural gas facility, a 50% stake in an oil field project in Siberia, and an energy joint venture. Claudio M. and Edison.me know the truth. Only allegiance is to the almighty dollar. It will also, Shell is also going to end its involvement in the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Updating the stock market on its expected results for the first 3 months of the year, Shell added there will be a pre-tax depreciation of $1.2 billion to $1.4 billion in its integrated gas division. There's also expected to be a depreciation of its upstream business of $2.8 to $3.1 billion, which is $700 to $900 million for oil products and $250 million to $300 for its chemicals division. Which is just, these numbers are so big, it's really hard to conceptualize, but it's happening. All right, and let me make sure. So this isn't strictly Russia, but I think it ties in, and then we'll play a song, because this guy...
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
U.S. officials have arrested two men who had spent thousands of dollars seeking to influence Secret Service agents. An affidavit filed with the U.S. District Court accused Aryan Terhazade, 40, and Haider Ali, 36, of posing as Department of Homeland Security employees. FBI officials said the men had used the guys to get closer to four agents, one of whom served on First Lady Jill Biden's protection detail. The agents had been put on leave ahead of an investigation. In a statement issued to the BBC, a Secret Service spokesperson said the agents will be restricted from accessing Secret Service facilities, equipment, and systems as the investigation progresses. According to the affidavit filed on Wednesday by federal prosecutors, Mr. Terhazade and Mr. Ali spent thousands of dollars buying four Secret Service agents and one DHS official rent-free apartments with a total yearly rent of over $40,000. iPhones, surveillance systems, a drone, a flat-screen TV, a case for storing an assault rifle, a generator, and law enforcement paraphernalia. The pair also offered to buy one agent, who served as a protection officer for Ms. Biden, an assault rifle worth $2,000. So, what their plan was, or how they were going to use this influence, is anybody's guess, but they're going to appear in court on Thursday in Washington, and they might just disappear. You never know, but a lot of times, these kind of people disappear. We never hear from them again. Anyway, this song is called Banned from the Gucci Store. It is one of those kind of songs that you might hear on internet noises. It's but I like it, and it's a little bit of a change up. So here we go.
Louis Vuitton because I'm banned from the Gucci store. Louis Vuitton because I'm banned from the Gucci store. Louis Vuitton because I'm banned from the Gucci store.
You have been permanently
Louis Vuitton because I'm banned from the Gucci store. Louis Vuitton because I'm banned from the Gucci store. Louis Vuitton because I'm banned from the Gucci store. Louis Vuitton because I'm banned from the Gucci store. Gucci store, Gucci store, Gucci store, Gucci store.
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
Oh, yeah. That's right. This is, you're listening to Non-Radio, powered by SDF. And SDF's powered by you, the people who are listening and hanging out and using SDF for stuff. So thanks for being here, and thanks for, you know, just thanks for hanging out. The song was called Banned from the Gucci Store, if you couldn't tell. It's a Felix Kartal remix, World of T-Shirts. Felix Kartal were the artists, and welcome Bob Jonkman. Thank you so much for tuning in. I would just, while I'm thinking about music, say that Machine Gun Kelly cover of Aerials is not so great. Oh, the name of the song, Claudio M., is for asking, is Banned from the Gucci Store. yeah, and if you haven't seen it on YouTube, you can find Machine Gun Kelly covering Aerials, the System of a Down song. It was not that great. It was pretty tough to listen to. And then Puddle of Mud covered a Nirvana song, was also not so great. So yeah, anyway, there's several artists covering old songs and trying to put them out again, and it's just, none of them are as good as the original, and it's all terrible. All right, well, let's get focused back together.
Resistance is futile.
What? Claudio M. calling fake news on news to me, because I will tell you, I am not banned from the Gucci store. The song was just someone talking about being banned from the Gucci store. So I don't want anyone to be confused by my position there. All right. Well, there's a lot of other stuff going on in the world, so we're going to flip to the other end of my list of news stories and start from the back. Stop Press. Algeria billionaire to shut Liberty newspaper. That's right. Algeria's French-language newspaper, Liberté, will run its final edition next week, the newspaper announced, criticizing the decision by its owner, the country's richest man. After 30 years in existence, Liberté is being extinguished, it said in an editorial. The closure adds to an already difficult climate for journalism in Algeria, which is ranked one of the world's worst countries for press freedom. Oh. yes. Bob J, that's a great joke. Oh, banned, not banned. Yep. In a few days, newspaper vendors, readers, advertisers, and the institutions of the Republic will be orphaned by a newspaper that has made its name as a reference for all viewpoints, it wrote. Algerian intellectuals and public figures had signed a petition urging its owner, Issad Rabab, to change his mind, but to no avail. An appeal by the newspaper's journalists also fell on deaf ears. They had written Sunday that they did not understand why the newspaper was to be closed. The publishing company still had sufficient financial resources to allow it to continue to exist, they wrote. Forbes reported Thursday that Rabab and his family are the world's second richest Arabs, worth $5.1 billion, and he is the founder of Sevital, which owns one of the world's biggest sugar refineries. Liberté's closure is a victory for silence over speech and for violence over debate, Algerian novelist Kamel Daoud wrote Thursday in the newspaper. So, just as an extra heads up, several journalists are in prison or facing trial, notably for defamation of political figures, and the country ranks 146 out of 180 on the Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index. Bob Jonkman says, reading my comment out loud doesn't help. And that is true when we're talking about homophones. X1 is offering a free beer to anyone going to the Gucci store and asking for a cheeseburger. You must keep them up high. All right. Sorry, I lose in focus. Here we go. The Nagorno-Karabakh region, things are flaring up again. Armenia and Azerbaijan prepare for peace talks. Armenia and Azerbaijan are preparing for peace talks, officials in both countries said Thursday, after a flare-up last month in the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region over which they fought a 2020 war. Armenia's Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan and Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev met Wednesday in Brussels for rare talks mediated by European Council President Charles Michel. The meeting came up after a flare in Karabakh on March 25th that saw Azerbaijan capture a strategic village in the area under the Russian peacekeepers' responsibility, killing three separatist troops. During the meeting, the two leaders ordered foreign ministers to begin preparatory work for peace talks between the two countries. An agreement was reached during the meeting to set up a bilateral commission on the issues of delimitation of the Armenian-Azerbaijan border, which will be in charge of ensuring security and stability along the frontier. So, we'll see what happens there. Maybe we'll get more war in the world. So let's talk about some California stories. What? Domestic stuff? Wow. California woman wins $10 million after accidentally buying wrong lottery ticket. Wish that was me, right? A woman accidentally bought the wrong lottery ticket after an unknown stranger bumped into her as she made her purchase from an automatic machine, only to discover she had hit the jackpot and scooped a whopping $10 million prize. California TV station KABC, this could be a movie or something, or a TV show, California TV station KABC reported that LaQuadra Edwards was at a Vaughn's supermarket in the city of Tarzana when she put $40 into a vending machine. She described how some rude person bumped into her as she was selecting her options, and she ended up mistakenly purchasing a $30 ticket. "He just bumped into me, didn't say a thing, and just walked out the door," Edwards said in a statement released by the California Lottery. She then returned to her car, scratched off the ticket, and discovered she'd won a gigantic sum of money. "I didn't really believe it at first, but I got on the 405 freeway and kept looking down at the ticket, and I almost crashed my car." According to the statement, Edwards plans on buying a house and setting up a charity organization. So, kind of a fun thought to think, you know, what could you do with $10 million U.S. dollars? You know, who knows what they would use that money for? Fucking cops. Dirty-ass cops is who. California City spent huge shares of federal COVID relief funds on police. Because, yeah, that's what the United States loves to do. From the city government all the way up. The money always flows to whoever buys guns. Those are the people who get all the money. Kind of a surprise, I guess. Big cities in California spent large portions of their federal COVID relief money on police departments, a review of public records has revealed, with several cities prioritizing police funding by a wide margin. As part of the American Rescue Plan Act, the Biden administration's signature stimulus package, the U.S. government sent funds to cities to help them fight coronavirus and support local recovery efforts. The money, officials said, could be used to fund a range of services, including public health and housing initiatives, healthcare workers' salaries, infrastructure investments, and aid for small businesses. But most large California cities spent millions of those dollars on law enforcement. Some also gave police money from the Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act, adopted in 2020 under Donald Trump. San Francisco got $312 million in funds for 2020 and allocated 49%, or $153 million, to police, 13% to the Sheriff's Department, and the remainder to the Fire Department, according to the city controller. San Francisco also gave roughly 22%, or $38.5 million, of its CARES funds to law enforcement. L.A. spent roughly 50% of its funds, giving it to the LAPD, famous for its gangs and murder. Fresno spent $36.6 million of its funds on police, making up 67% of it spent on city salaries, and roughly 40% of all Fresno's CARES funds. San Jose gave about 12% of its money. Long Beach allocated the majority of its $135.8 million to the police, though a spokesman said a detailed breakdown wasn't available. Oh, and also Oakland, Sacramento, and San Diego all spent all the money that was supposed to go to... this is money... And by the way, this is money that was supposed to go to like people who are hungry, who weren't working, who, it was supposed to go to people who needed food and water and help paying rent and stuff like that. Instead, they bought guns and tanks and all this other kind of bullshit. So, anyway, if you didn't know, now you know. See you later, Claudio M. Have a good one. Enjoy your day. All right. Well, what else is happening? Well, we got 5 minutes to go, so let's talk about these other stories, but maybe not as much detail. Yemen's president sacks deputy and hands over presidential powers to a council. Yemen's president said on Thursday he had dismissed Vice President Ali Mohsen al-Amhar and delegated its own powers to a presidential council that will carry out leadership duties. The new body will assume the duties of both the president and his deputy, said a statement from President Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi. The new council will carry out political, military, and security duties for the Yemeni government during what it refers to as a transitional period. Hadi was elected in 2012 following the political upheaval of 2011, of a 2011 uprising to a two-year term to oversee the democratic transition. But in late 2014, the Iran-aligned Houthi group seized the capital, and Hadi eventually fled south and then to Saudi Arabia and remained head of the internationally recognized government. The Leadership Council is made up of a chair and 70 deputy chairmen and will be led by Rashad Al-Alimi, a security official who was interior minister during the former presidency. So, we'll see how that goes. Hey, Dirty Rig. Hello. So that's going on there. Yemen's got new leadership going on. And this, I was hoping Publius would be around because I thought this would be an interesting discussion. Study finds uranium contamination in 2/3 of U.S. community water systems. Studies have found links between uranium exposure and increased risk of hypertension, heart disease, and kidney damage. Metal concentrations, including those of uranium, are particularly elevated in community water services catering to semi-urban Hispanic communities in the U.S., independent of location or region, according to a new study that's raised environmental justice concerns. The research was published last week in the Lancet Planetary Health Journal, and it found that these communities had community water sewer systems with the highest levels of uranium, selenium, barium, chromium, and arsenic. So, it's... Anon, Dirty Rig posted Anon Radio News, but he spelled it phonetically, so it's like non bread. Scientists have found a fossil of a dinosaur killed on the day of the asteroid strike, believed to have knocked all the dinosaurs out of existence. Scientists believe they have been given an extraordinary view of the last day of the dinosaurs after they discovered the fossil of an animal they believe died that day. The perfectly preserved leg, which even includes remnants of the animal's skin, can be accurately dated to the time the asteroid that brought about the dinosaur's extinction struck Earth 66 million years ago, experts say, because of the presence of debris from the impact, which rained down only in its immediate aftermath. It's absolutely bonkers, said Philip Manning. This is the ultimate dinosaur drumstick. So, very cool. See you later, Jay Gary. Thanks for being here. We've only got about a minute to go. It's happening now. Rising sea levels are causing a U.S. migration crisis. So if you're in the U.S., get away from the coastline. The coming mass migration of flood-prone areas will have a huge social and economic cost, but the government doesn't even have a plan. So you can read more about that over there at The Guardian if you're interested. And, well, the only other thing, expect imminent North Korean nuclear tests. Other than that, please stick around. The Dubious Goals Committee is coming up in just about 30 seconds. Hopefully we'll hear from Tobe, see how he's doing. We'll see. And just, yeah, in general, stay safe and remember your rights and all that jazz. All right, thanks for listening. You have a good one. I'm going to play a song for the last 10 seconds or so, I guess. I remember hiding, I was shy and I had stage fright. I remember crying, I just want you to be alright. Want you to be okay, okay baby, alright. Want you to be 1800.